We're going to begin the Subcommittee on Sexual Harassment Prevention and Response. We're going to establish a quorum, so if we can please call roll.
Assemblymember Friedman.
Here.
Friedman here. Assemblymember Dolly.
Here.
Assemblymember Dolly here. Reyes.
Here.
Reyes here. Waldron. Here. Waldron here. Senator Mitchell.
Here.
Senator Mitchell here. Senator Bates.
Here.
Senator Bates here. Senator Leyva.
Here.
Senator Leyva here. Senator Morlock.
Present.
Senator Morlock here. We have a quorum.
Thank you. Today is the eighth hearing of this committee, and I expect it to be the last of this subcommittee before we send our recommended policy framework to joint rules, hopefully for adoption or modification. I want to thank all of the committee members for your hard work. I don't think we had any absences on this hearing. Everybody worked very hard, very cooperatively, in a very bipartisan manner, and I'm very proud of the final result. We met on Monday to go over in more detail the recommended framework for our new sexual harassment policies, which cover everything from training to reporting to adjudication, all the way through the process, and we're making a lot of very fundamental changes. This is the beginning of what's going to be a work in progress over time that we will constantly be reevaluating, I'm sure, and tweaking to suit our needs. But I think that we're starting with a very, very strong framework that's going to make a lot of fundamental changes. We heard several comments on Monday and have changed our document to reflect many of those comments. I'm just going to briefly go through those. Before I do, I would like to see if my Vice Chair, Senator Holly Mitchell, has any comments at this time. No? Great. So the comments that we heard that we have made modifications to the document, and just so everyone knows, there are two documents that have been provided to the subcommittee, one document with redlined changes and another document that is a now complete new document. And I'm going to highlight five items that were changed. The first had to do with lobbyists, a concern raised by Assemblymember Reyes and others, which is to make the recommendations clearer on the availability of this process to address the conduct of lobbyists and others. And this is something that is reflected in the document and will be a discussion point for joint rules on Monday, and something that we will look at finding ways of incorporating into our policy. And by the way, because I'm going to take these one at a time, if anybody has a comment on a specific item, you can go ahead and make it before I move to the next item. So any comments on that item? Okay. The second, Senator Bates brought up criminal cases. We have clarified that criminal conduct will be referred directly to law enforcement, but we will also allow the investigation to be suspended or to proceed internally as well, depending on the circumstances. The third comment is about panel appointments, which was a concern to Assemblymember Dolly and Waldron and others. We are going to clarify the panel appointment process to ensure that the panel is nonpartisan by requesting that the Chief Justice appoint the majority of the panel members. Assemblymember Dolly.
Thank you. And first, I want to say it's been a real pleasure to sit on this committee and to be able to engage with my colleagues from the Senate and the Assembly. And I think that, as you stated earlier, that this is a work in progress, and we're attempting to do something that hasn't been done in the Assembly or the Senate for a long time, and bring shed light on some situations. So I want to commend this committee and to show the seriousness of it. You know, nobody missed a meeting, and that's rare to happen in this building. So with this item here, I wanted to, I have a suggestion, and by the way, here's what my goal, and I tried to kind of state this maybe Monday, that for me, the goal is to make it as nonpartisan as a policy as we can get. So I have a suggestion here and I just learned a few minutes ago about how the differences of the two houses work, which I wasn't totally aware of. So I want to share with you that I think that it's appropriate that the Chief Justice appoint three. I think that's a great start. But the remaining two, that each house, so I said this was my suggestion, that each house choose the remaining one, so we get to a total of five, and that the minority leader and the speaker work together on our side to point that, and the minority leader and the pro tem on the other side come into agreement to point that. So that takes out all partisanship on that five-person panel. So that's what I would suggest be the process moving forward. So in today's world, it would be Anthony and I, and then on the Senate side, it would be Tony and Pat. And so that would then they could work together in agreement with that appointment. So we get to a really nonpartisan committee that can look at these cases and come up with so that there's no way that it's weighted by partisanship at all.
Thumbs up.
Thank you for that excellent suggestion. Moving on, follow up with complainant. Assemblymember Waldron had brought this up, and we have clarified that to direct the independent unit to provide updates to the complainant so that they understand that the process is ongoing and that it's being dealt with. Lastly, mandatory reporting. Again, Assemblymember Waldron and others, we're going to conform the recommendations and policy to clearly require supervisors to report complaints of inappropriate conduct. And of course, we're going to be training and encouraging all employees to report if inappropriate conduct if they witness it, at the very least to find out if it's something that is reportable. So that's going to be an ongoing training goal as we work with our employees. With that, if there's no more comments about the changes, I would like to take public comment and then I'll come back. But so I'll go now to Senator Bates.
Oh, thank you, Chair. This is not included in your current document as an amendment. It's a suggestion that we put forward when we reach joint rules. And it has to do with Section 5, retain House authority to determine appropriate response to reports. In the last line on Section A, it says the chair of the relevant rules committees will receive a copy of each report. That suggests that only two individuals are going to get the report. And that puts a huge burden on them of perhaps being, I hate to use the word accused, but the perception might be that they could bury a report on someone in sort of a privileged or a partisan manner. And so I'm suggesting that we strike the language that says the chair of the relevant rules committee will receive a copy of each report and add, in the Senate, each report shall be simultaneously provided to all five members of the rules committee. That's how it operates on the Senate side. And the secretary of the Senate, and then in the Assembly, each report shall be simultaneously provided to the chair and the vice chair of the Assembly Rules Committee and the administrative officer of the Assembly. And that provides a broader distribution. Chairwoman Friedman had a question regarding would that include all the reports, even those where there was just an inappropriate comment that doesn't rise? I think we could think about that between now and then, and if there's appropriate language that ALF can maybe factor into it, that's fine. But I think if I were the pro tem and I was going to be the only one that got the report, and if you remember there was a little dust up about that earlier, that's not a good burden to put on the individuals when we're talking about something like this, the culture change, and if there's any sort of favoritism or lack of transparency. So I think it addresses both of those issues that we have spoken about on the committee over the course of our discussions. And transparency is important, and we would all, you know, have a copy at the same time of the same information.
Thank you, Senator Mitchell.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Bates. I appreciate the perspective and the draft language, and I think, as my colleague just mentioned, recognizing that the two Senate Rules Committees really have different core functions and operate very differently, it'll be important that we make sure that the language just applies to both Rules Committees appropriately. And so you're asking that we continue to talk about the details and take it up on Monday when the Joint Rules Committee meets?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Senator Morlock.
Madam Chair. I have a lot of questions, but I'm just going to narrow it down to three because we're going to, you know, we've had a short notice. We just got the drafts just Friday. But this is going to be, these are going to be the three questions we're going to get once we step out of the room and we get reporter interviews. The first is that there's a criticism that the policy doesn't recommend changing state law to require that documents about the legislature's harassment inquiries or findings be made public. What should my answer be?
have an opinion too, so you go ahead.
Okay, I'll let Senator Mitchell respond first.
Senator Morlock, you've been an employer before, and we're an employer now, and I think what's been unique about this process for me, and I think I've been certainly the one to constantly say it in all of our meetings, both publicly and privately, is that we're an employer, and we are developing a policy to govern our internal workplace behavior. I think that we have stepped up to the plate in a meaningful way to have a public process in these now 8 hearings to help develop the process, but fundamentally it is an HR policy. And I know that is for some challenging in terms of a desire for transparency. And I believe the development of this process has been transparent. And to the degree that it is appropriate in that it is a HR policy for a workplace, the policy we've developed has been transparent. We'll continue to have conversations to make it palatable to us, the employers. But we have to recognize that as employers, we have a responsibility to protect the privacy of employees. And so transparency, we talked at an earlier hearing about semantics and how we can kind of throw words around and this expectation of transparency. But this is an internal HR policy.
So the second question.
Let me just add to that, if I might. I think it's also worth pointing out that the model that we've based a lot of this policy on, and which is the Los Angeles County's model, has no transparency. Nothing is disclosed, as far as I know, to the press or to outside groups, whether it's about investigations of elected officials or any of their internal staff, even high-level staff. We made this decision in this panel to go beyond that and to disclose serious allegations, sustained allegations against members and senior staff, which is more that many public agencies are doing. There is a very large city in California that was on the front page of the LA Times this week about sexual harassment allegations in very high levels of their city department. And they said, we are going to say that these allegations are have been taken in, but we do not disclose the names of the person who's been accused. So we are actually going beyond what many public agencies are doing with disclosure. And I think that that's appropriate. It's appropriate that when it comes to members of the legislature, that when there are serious sustained allegations, that we continue our current policy that we have recently established of releasing that to the public. So we are continuing that process that was set into motion, I believe, earlier this year. Thank you. Thank you for bringing that up.
You guys are doing great. Question number two. Some are going to say, you know, there probably isn't real independence because we're using the Legislative Council. What would I say to that?
Let me say that we are designing this, and our instruction is that even though this body is sort of housed underneath the umbrella of Legislative Council, we're calling it the independent unit for a reason, that we are directing the policy to make sure that that unit is siloed so that independent counsel does not impact or weigh on the panel's decision. So that will be done through design and through instructions, and that will be the policy going forward.
And I think, you know, functionally, when you talk about an independent unit, they have to be housed someplace, paid by somebody, mm-hmm. report, I mean, and so where else could they be? How could they serve? I mean, we've looked at all kinds of options. And again, I think that we've created enough firewalls and housed it in a place that is truly bicameral. Ledge Council serves us both. And after you ask us all your questions, I'm going to be interested in terms of what your answers would be, in terms of your perspective of the policy.
I appreciate your defensiveness.
I don't have a defensive bone in my body.
We're all going to be, you know, asked, and so I'll give you the last one.
Okay, but it was sincere in terms of what I'm curious about your opinion.
Independence, when the County of Orange had its interesting uh-huh. episode and chapter, we actually established a panel, but it was of internal individuals. It was the county council, it was the internal audit director, and I cannot recall right now the third. So I felt, as a supervisor, that was adequate, that every complaint would be addressed, and that it was individuals reporting to me didn't seem to be a problem because they were sort of independent just in their roles. County council, who argues with county council? Who argues with the internal auditor? And so I was comfortable with it.
So then our system is kind of a step beyond that. That's a good thing.
You're doing great.
I'm glad I asked you the question.
Joel, here comes the toughest one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Whether or not it's still a process that gives individuals assurance, because it's still the legislators at the end of the day that oversee, like I just said, the Ledge Council, and we even select or approve the Chief Justice. So we still have some kind of control, and so that also kind of makes a comment about independence. So how are we remedying that?
Well, the legislators don't weigh in on the panel's determination whether or not there was a violation.
So who determines the punishment then?
Well, so the panel makes recommendations about what the response will be, punishment, response, however you want to call it, training, whatever the response is. And just like in Los Angeles County, there still needs to be some discretion for the employer in terms of how that works and what that looks like, because the panel, they're outside people who come in to look at the individual situation and say, you know, they will know the policy and to be able to make that determination. But they're also not in the offices to really kind of know necessarily what a certain individual does day to day, what's the most appropriate response. They can make a recommendation. My guess is in many cases it will be a fairly broad recommendation. We think this was very serious. There should be a lot of discipline. But they may not say, and that discipline means, you know, what this, that, or the other thing. But for members,
we don't know.
It may be. But I think for members, you know, let's be honest. The most discipline you can give a member of the legislature is public disclosure. You know, we can't be fired. There's some discipline that can be handed out. Committees can be taken away. You can be thrown out of caucus. At the very end, you could be expelled for, you know, egregious violations, although it doesn't happen very often. But being on the front page of the newspaper, saying that you've had a sustained, serious allegation of sexual harassment, that's very serious. We saw what's happened to the careers of some of our colleagues where that happened. And that we won't have control over. Leadership won't have control over that, because our policy says that we will release that determination, if it's found to have occurred, to the media. So already you've taken the role of leadership making that decision out of their hands. We're giving that now for the first time to an independent panel to decide. And that's a huge change, huge. And that is without it will be certainly out of the hands of the colleagues of the legislators to make that determination. It will be up to the panel to do that by our policy that we've stated. And we cannot, overstate, I think, the gravity of that. And I don't think that's going to be lost on any of our colleagues. And, that's different from maybe what happened long ago in the past. I don't know. I wasn't here. But that's new as far as I can see.
Thank you, Madam Chairs. Good job.
Yes.
So that's why I think it's very critical that five-person body is very independent, so that we have non-part. That's the key to this whole thing. In my mind, the key to this is that we have faith and trust in that panel, that whatever the outcome is justice. It's right. So that's why I brought that forward. And I think that's the key to this whole thing, is that if your panel is structured in a way where it is truly not, there's no way that the thumb can be on the scale in any direction, then we're going to get somewhere, I think, in a positive place.
And Assemblymember, we'll look to continue to adjust the language as we take the policy forward on Monday. And so I think it's two things. It's the issue of nonpartisanship, and I think all of us are going to have to collectively address this issue about whether we can be professional enough and have the capacity to follow the recommendations of the panel and police ourselves, if you will. I just heard from Senator Morlock a living example of when it was internal employees, if you will, who served on that panel. And so I think it's two things, that we I would hope, will push back to those who say they want it truly independent. A, I don't know what that means in a workplace. And so nonpartisan, I hear you and I get it. I think that we have to address both of those concerns.
Absolutely, I agree. And I'll just to clarify, because there's two different things the panel does. One is to make the determination if there's been a violation of policy. That's what, if it's a serious substantiated violation of our sexual harassment policy, that's what would be released to the public. The recommendation is different. That, you know, we are not anticipating releasing that to the public. That's where we do have to have the discipline to be able to police ourselves and to make that determination as an employer. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to clarify that point.
And then just one clarification, and that is with point one, dealing with lobbyists, do we feel comfortable enough that, because we cannot discipline lobbyists other than, you know, disclosing that they've been investigated.
Right.
Are you comfortable with what we're doing here to address? Because I was confused, as Assemblywoman Reyes was, that we have that one category of lobbyists and other, and it was a little difficult to
yeah.
understand the survey.
Thank you, and that's a very fair question. I think that we still have a lot of work to do to determine what that looks like when it comes to any member of the public. I will say that we have an affirmative duty if we're told that one of our employees is subject to sexual harassment or other types of serious abuse from any member of the public, to protect them. And we can't do that without launching some kind of an investigation. So we will have to investigate that, and I believe that we should be doing that now, and I think that in some cases we do that mm-hmm. when someone complains that someone that they're in constant contact with through their work is sexually harassing them. In terms of the rest of our policy, that other conduct towards others, clearly we can't extend that to a constituent out in the field. So we're going to have to kind of figure out what that looks like. And it will probably be a little bit different for people who are in the building every day because it's their job, being our lobbyists, and just members of the public. But I want to know if one of my field representatives finds that they're constantly in a situation that they think is dangerous or uncomfortable in the performance of their work when they're out in the field, I want them to have a place to report that, and we need to take some action to protect them, whether it's saying that we're not going to have a public event with that individual or whatever it is, but we have that responsibility. And that's something that we'll figure out as we move this policy forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There are no further comments at this time. I'm sorry, Senator Leyva.
Be sorry. This is just a quick comment. I too want to thank again the chair and the vice chair. But I think that Senator Mitchell, you really hit the nail on the head. This is an HR matter, and we can't forget that. Companies have HR departments that are paid for by that company, and there is really no way for us to be completely independent. Who would that person be? I'm incredibly impressed with the work of this committee. We started out a little rocky. I wasn't sure where we were going to end up, but this is a big sea change for the legislature, and I think that we have come to some really great conclusions. We've come to a policy I think is very workable, doable, and is going to protect everyone who works in this building. So I think moving forward, it will probably also be a little rocky, only because it's such a big sea change, but everyone has come together and worked very hard on this. So I thank you, and I just hope that we all remember we're in this for the right reasons. We're in this to protect those that we work with. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And actually, and I do want to just piggyback on that, because you mentioned our internal HR department, which is under our rules departments. We have extremely professional HR people in our rules departments. And any failure that there has been or perceived to have been, it's not because we don't have professional people. It's because our policy, which is a top-down policy, has allowed for those failures. The same individuals that are in our rules department are certainly very capable of administering this policy. And I would love to see more people like that, you know, as we continue to flesh this out. You know, we have these great HR people. I'd love to see over time that we have more of these professional HR people out there to support our staff. And I know that the people that we have are going to be, you know, are very fair and highly trained, and they can certainly administer the policy. We have Assemblymember Reyes, and followed by Dally.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank the committee. I think we did, just as Senator Leyva has indicated, we did a good job. We did start out a little rocky, but I'm very proud of the work that we've done in a bipartisan, bicameral way. And I appreciate the fact that at the last hearing, you heard our comments, and you've included those as potential revisions to the policy that had already been put into effect. We're looking to change the culture in the Capitol. It took a long time to get to where we are today, and it's going to take a long time to get it to where we want it to be. But I do appreciate all that you have done, Madam Chair, Madam Vice Chair, and all of the staff. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Assemblymember Dally.
So now I just want to ask for the process from here forward. So I want to, we have agreement on at least four of the things that were listed out here. We have an amendment from Senator Bates, and then we have a question on three of how we're going to do the appointment. So what's the process going forward?
Thank you. So the first step after we've made our comments is we're going to have the public, ask the public if they would like to speak. And then we will vote to send the recommendations along with the considerations of the issues that you brought up, send that for joint rules as consideration, along with the amendment that you that was submitted to us for joint rules to consider.
Because I think some of the issues that have come up have just come up today, and so we do need to have time to make sure that the leaders of both houses have had the opportunity to weigh in. And so I think since we have the meeting on Monday, all of those issues can be, we can put some meat on those bones and can be clarified as we present on Monday.
Okay, so then say that there is a discrepancy between the houses because they operate different. Say that one house decides that it's okay and the other house doesn't like it. What would be the process for going forward?
The process that we've used up to this point, that we continue to negotiate, we bring in leaders, which include yourself as the minority leader for the assembly, to continue to work on it until we get some language that we can agree with. That's the process we've utilized up to this point.
Awesome. I want to finish strong too. And I think that we have very much, we have covered a lot of ground, and there's some details that I think will make it really strong and very helpful for. No, the biggest concern I have is that there are still employees out there who don't have a process that they feel comfortable with, and we're getting towards that. And I know we have all the time in the world to do it right, and we have no time to do it wrong because they're waiting. I know there are some out there that are waiting for a process that is good and proper. And so if we have the ability moving forward to work out a few, I think we have just minor things at this point, really. I think we're all trying to get to the right place, so I'm excited about that. So if there is a time, I would be happy to make a motion or whatever you would like, Madam Chair, after public comment.
Thank you. Assemblymember Waldron.
Just really briefly, thank you so much to the chairs for your hard work on that. This whole committee really stuck with it. When you think about where we started off with all the emotion and the crowded meetings and all the media and everything else that was going on, trying to take all of that and focus it down into something that is really a workable solution that, we will continue. It has to continue as this, moves ahead. Things will surface, and as we heard even in the beginning of the week, one of the things we might want to consider is come back and redo the survey in, 6 months or 8 months or whatever, so we can see, what impact it has had at that point. And we'll know going forward, and, this committee would probably have to reconvene again at some point and continue to look at some of this. So I'm encouraged by where we've gotten to. I'm encouraged by the fact that we could all put input in and that we can still continue to work on the fine points and make something that is really workable. Thank you.
Thank you.
Before you open up to public comment.
Yes, Senator Mitchell.
Before we open up to public comment, I just wanted to say that as we recall the climate survey, and I talked about the bell curve and the promoter. Mr. Dolly, for our staffs to feel comfortable with this new policy, we're all going to have to agree to be promoters. To go above and beyond congratulating each other for our hard work, but to talk to our staffs. We are their closest connection to understanding what it means to be an employee of the legislature. So if we all agree to be promoters, to talk about our confidence in this policy, that will go far in terms of employees feeling comfortable to come forward because they've heard from us, because we've all agreed to be on the promoter side of that bell curve in terms of making sure that people understand that this policy is sound. We have every confidence in it. It's bicameral. It's bipartisan, and it's what's in their best interest.
Okay, if there's no more comments at this time, we'll turn to public comment. Is there any members of the public who would like to make any comments? If so, please come to the mic. It's fine.
Thank you. I'm Jim Lindberg on behalf of the Friends Committee on Legislation of California, and I will just reiterate that I'm very impressed with this work that's been produced and the recognition that culture always trumps policy and that we really need to focus on cultural change. Earlier this spring, the committee heard from Dr. Fania Davis from Restorative Justice Oakland Youth, and she spoke about the transformative value of restorative justice, especially when dealing with behavior that doesn't necessarily rise to the level of criminal conduct, but is nevertheless highly inappropriate and demands a response. Dr. Davis cited a case study from Dalhousie University in Canada, which implemented a restorative justice response to sexual harassment and sexual misconduct. The women who were the recipients of the inappropriate conduct reported a very high degree of satisfaction after participating in these restorative justice encounters. We have heard repeatedly in our work about how important and meaningful it is for victims to have their harm and suffering validated and acknowledged by the aggressor, and to be able to participate in constructing the remedy. Restorative justice is always optional. We think it should be an option for those who would like that as an alternative. Our hope is that moving forward that the legislature will formally recognize it as an alternative and create a structure where it could be put in place. Thank you.
Thank you very much. With that, if there's no final comments, we do have a motion from Mr. Daley.
I'll second.
And Senator Mitchell has seconded. With that, we have a roll call, please.
Senator, or Assemblymember Friedman?
Aye.
Friedman, aye. Daley?
Aye.
Daley, aye. Reyes?
Aye.
Reyes, aye. Waldron?
Aye.
Waldron, aye. Senator Mitchell?
Aye.
Senator Mitchell, aye. Bates?
Aye.
Bates, aye. Leyva?
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Morlock?
Aye.
Morlock, aye.
With that, we have unanimously adopted the recommendations for the framework of our new sexual harassment prevention and response policies, and we will be sending them to joint rules, which we'll meet on Monday. Again, I want to thank you all for your work, and with that, the hearing is adjourned.